With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, I'm Alex McLaren. I'm an actor and I've worked as a communications coach since 2002. Now so much business is being conducted remotely, the ways in which we talk, present, build relationships and connect is changing. In this podcast, I want to explore all those issues and prove to you that no matter who you are, you can talk to anyone. Hello and welcome to You Can Talk to Anyone, the podcast in which we open the bonnet on our communications engine. I'm Alex.
And I'm Tom.
And this week we're going to be talking about swearing for fun and profit. Was that how you jotted down the name of this episode, Tom? So what do you mean by that?
Well, first of all, normally these episodes go out without the explicit tag. So do we need to begin with a warning that we're going to be giving specific examples of the kind of language that we're talking about, or are we going to skirt around it?
Okay, no, I think we should be even more specific than that. I think we should make an undertaking not to swear.
Excellent.
And so we're going to be talking about swearing, and we're going to be referring to specific epithets by their, I think we're going to go for F-bombs and C-bombs,
right,
and
yes,
what have you throughout.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about why as we carry on.
Right.
This is such an interesting subject for me.
Yeah, so you're safe to listen to this in the car with kids or in any other environment where you feel like it wouldn't be appropriate to suddenly start turning the air blue.
When I think about it, I guess I'm thinking about all the different places in which this sort of taboo language features in my life. And I suppose I'm conscious that when I go in as a consultant to work with groups at work, I have a different kind of license. Partly because I'm a visitor, but also partly because they know I come from a background in performance. People expect comics or actors or people from the arts world to have a sophisticated and enjoyable relationship with this kind of language. Mm. We've all been kids once. And when you're at school, you're told not to swear, and your parents told you not to swear as well. I grew up in a kind of Catholic household, really. I don't remember us being a particularly sweary family.
No, I can remember my mother completely losing her temper in an airport once, and it was one of the very few times I'd seen her completely melt down.
Yes.
So many obstacles had been piled in our way, frustrating what should have been a family holiday.
Mm.
And it was quite the thing to suddenly hear her letting fly with, as you say, F-bombs and the like. But I think there is this weird thing that happens from the age of about 10 or 11 until you're kind of an adult yourself, until you're 19 or 20, which is that you stop swearing in front of the grown-ups and they stop swearing in front of you. But 15, 16-year-olds definitely do swear when their parents aren't present, and their parents definitely do swear when the teenagers aren't around.
When the kids aren't, or in some cases when they are.
yes.
And it's a very peculiar thing. I mean, I was like you, occasionally you'd hear your parents use language which you'd only hear in the playground. It wasn't that I didn't know what those words meant. I absolutely knew what they meant, which was why it was shocking to hear my parents do it. But there's this kind of this deal about how we interact between the generations, authority figures and those people they're supposed to be setting an example to, and so forth. I mean, I remember occasions when I would use words when I didn't know what they meant and was thoroughly humiliated when my mother would explain it to me. I remember once famously in my family talking to my mother about my older brother, who I resented for whatever reason at the time, I love you, hater, and accusing him of being a C word. And my mother asked me, do you know what that word means? And I said, well, yeah, it's just like a lucky get, isn't it? Which is a Lancashire word for that you just used to tick people off. And she said, no, it's a slang word for a vagina, so don't use it at school. and of course, I was absolutely mortified. So the kind of the real meaning of words and the context in which they're appropriate, both that seems to me to be important. In our house, and those of you who don't know me, I have an 11-year-old son. We are actually quite sweary, I think. Mm. And that's a real problem. And I didn't quite know, I didn't want to, and I'm sure those of you who are experts on raising children will tell me this is a bad strategy, but we didn't want to get into a sort of a system where we were telling him, you can't use these words, one doesn't use these words, in the sense of almost fooling him that there was a Santa Claus. And we ended up, I remember when we were coming up with a list of rules, the best I could do was, in this house, we take language seriously. And so we're constantly having to point out to Frank, no, that is not something you say when there are grown-ups around at the moment. And I guess we'll keep on changing those tickings off as he grows up and becomes more sophisticated.
And of course, we all speak in different registers in different situations. You don't speak intimately to your partner the way you'd speak to somebody in business you only just met. I don't speak to you, Alex, the same way I speak to my cat. And I think you'd
sometimes
be,
you do.
You'd be very alarmed if I did. So this doesn't feel to me like censorship or anything like it. It's simply, how can we express ourselves in a way which is going to be acceptable to the people that we're talking to and convey the impression that we want to give? I'm not somebody who thinks that swearing is a sign of a limited vocabulary. I think it's possible to swear with tremendous articulacy and creativity. And I would defend my right in the appropriate venue to use whatever word I deem appropriate.
Yes.
But I don't tend to deem those words appropriate when I'm in front of a bunch of young lawyers trying to explain to them how they can connect with their clients better.
Yeah, it's interesting that. I mean, I think maybe you and I differ to a degree about this, but for very specific reasons. It's funny. I was thinking about who has permission to swear. And in what context they have, how they create a context in which they have permission. I think the example that was often given me was that of my in-laws. They're a much more proper family than mine, I would say, than the family I grew up in. And yet one thing that Zoe noticed is that Billy Connolly seemed to be able to say absolutely anything, and they just thought he was wonderful. So what was going on there? And I think there are a number of different things. One, of course, is that Billy Connolly was a total stranger, and so they didn't feel they had the right to upbraid him. Secondly, Billy Connolly was on television, and so was very famous and powerful. Thirdly, Billy Connolly was talking to thousands of people who just adored every word that was falling from his mouth. And
who are therefore endorsing
everything he's saying and the language he's
using. Would Billy Connolly, do you think, have used the same language if he'd been invited round to your in-laws for dinner?
Well, this is it.
I don't think he would.
I don't think he would, absolutely. But the situation in which he's setting up that persona, telling those stories, I think there are also a couple of other things as well. One is that Billy Connolly is a Scot. And when you're kind of ranking the shocking value of particular swear words, one often finds that they vary differently in different territories. For example, the C word that I accidentally uttered as a child is considered absolutely scandalous in the United States, but in Glasgow is almost a sign of affection.
It's virtually punctuation.
His ease with it and his familiarity with it, and there was a class warrior dimension to him that he's foregrounding that language as valid and fighting for it. And that is there implicitly, I think, in everything that he's doing. And so I think his accent sort of frees him up a little bit in a way.
And as absurd as it sounds, there is a sort of hierarchy of bad language. And there are words which are very much at the top, and there are words which are much more acceptable nowadays than they would have been in my parents' generation, you know, and the generation before that. In Pygmalion by Bernard Shaw, which is all about language and what assumptions people make about other people based on how they pronounce words and what words they choose, there's a riotously funny scene where Higgins has successfully taught Cockney flower girl Eliza how to pronounce words correctly, but not which words to use. And she exits a polite afternoon tea with the phrase, not bloody likely, which on the London stage in the 19th century caused absolute outrage and gales of delighted and or shocked laughter. By the time the film came around, made in, I think, 1964, not bloody likely was no longer going to ruffle any feathers. And so instead, the action was moved to a horse racing event.
This is in the musical My Fair Lady.
In My Fair Lady, yes, that's right. And Audrey Hepburn yells, "Move your blooming ass," which again caused a frisson through cinemas in the 1960s, but wouldn't cause anyone even to raise an eyelid today. So I think there are words in the sort of hinterland. I'm fairly confident that I'm not going to offend anyone today if on this podcast I will use the phrase "piss off," particularly if I say feeling pissed off as opposed to an injunction that somebody I dislike should go away. And there is a part of one of the exercises that we do with groups of people where I will say maybe even a bit pissed off. Mm. And sometimes there is a little frisson around the room.
Yeah.
But I'll be, I think, on safe ground. No one's going to report me to HR, I don't think, for using that phrase. But you, I think, are more eager than I am to go further than that sooner than I would.
Yes. So first of all, I just want to point out that all of Tom's profanities today come under the use mention distinction. So indeed, that he's mentioning the swear words rather than using them in anger or whatever other emotional sense. But yeah, I think that one thing which I think is when I'm working with people about communication, one of the things which people are desperately hungry for is authenticity. I think people, when they go to work, I've literally had some people say to me, "I almost put on a persona like it's a hat." Mm. And one way which, as a visitor, I've felt I have a certain amount of license to just prod people into maybe a little bit more relaxed and a little bit more personal use of language, which they might use with people who they know a little better than me, is to set a sweary example a little bit, and maybe a little bit earlier. And I think, I don't think I've ever had negative feedback about that. But I wouldn't give that advice for somebody who was doing this kind of work internally in an organization. I think I have a different kind of license, like Billy Connolly, because I'm a visitor and because I'm appointed to lead. It would be different advice for people who are junior in organizations as a representative of that outfit. In fact, I'd probably say, if you're in any doubt about whether swearing is okay, don't swear. I think it's generally a good rule.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
I'm trying to think of other swearers I've met in a workplace situation who I thought somehow got away with it. And I've got quite a few examples, actually. I remember when I was probably one of the first jobs I was paid money to do was I was working in an administrative role in a civil service division called the British Council. Do you know these guys? They used to be near Trafalgar Square. And there was a unit of people who were all sending reports and programs back and forth to offices all over Europe and the rest of the world. And the guy who ran the department, he was wonderful. He was small, sharp, very clever. And occasionally he would drop the F-bomb in a sort of a passionate argument about somebody he was doing business with, which used to just make us roar with laughter. It was just hilariously funny, and it was very, very occasional. You ever come across this sort of that surprising swearer?
Oh, yeah. But I think it's noteworthy that this was somebody senior.
The seniority matters.
Yeah. And like Billy Connolly, he's not answerable to anybody.
Yeah.
Do you think there is a gendered component to this? Do you think men can get away with swearing more easily than women? And do you think that there is a different connotation to a woman using foul language? I have to say, I don't like that description.
Don't even like the term. Yeah, exactly. And we all know what you mean.
Using these taboo words. Yeah.
The other example I was thinking of as a really good example of a successful swearer was Miriam Margolyes, who
gets licensed because she's mad.
Well, there is a degree to that, but she's But is she mad though? There's something intensely kind of complicated that's going on there, and she is definitely very deliberate about what she's doing. And so she lines up with a whole load of those performers who often have, there's something very kind of delightful and sweet about them, but famously have a mouth like a sailor, which is a term which will go around about women who have got a confident grasp of this kind of lingo.
Judi Dench is widely said to have a filthy sense of humor.
Exactly, yeah. And again, when I was going through my list of kind of effective swearers in this regard, unlike Billy Connolly, these were all posh-voiced people. Mm. Posh-voiced English people who could quite happily play Mary Poppins. But Mary Poppins wouldn't say the kind of things that Julie Andrews would say on set. Okay. I remember when I was at drama school at the Bristol Old Vic, we had this wonderful voice teacher called Francis Thomas. You know the Pixar film Up? Mm. Well, the old granddad in that film looks exactly like my old voice teacher. And Francis was an American. He had this just an amazing voice. I mean, he sounded like, it was just delicious. And we all used to tease him. We all desperately, he was a brilliant teacher. We all adored him. And I remember once he dropped some absolutely foul language in a story that just once in the 2 years that he taught us. But it was that very judicious, oh gosh, who not only is it in your range, you know precisely how to be most effective with it because so sparing. But again, it's the authority and that kind of that high status dimension, the understanding of that status dimension that gave him permission, I think.
In terms of building relationships, I think it is one of those things that can, if you judge it right, be used to build trust. Mm. Because if I am frustrated with the world or annoyed at the way things are going, and I feel free to take you into my confidence and say to you of other people, aren't they?
Yes,
swear word, swear word, swear word. Then I am saying, I trust you to have access to some very deep and personal feelings about this. I'm not going to pretty this up for you in professional language.
I think that's true. I think you're almost giving a hostage to somebody. And
there's a huge difference, I think, in using swear words about somebody and using swear words to somebody. Mm. If I have the same relationship with that person and I use those swear words not to describe my frustration with another person or thing, but to describe my frustration with the person I'm talking to.
Yes.
Then I think things are very different.
Yes, I think so. I mean, we often, I think it's, I don't know if you know this, that swearing when you bang your foot is it's thought to actually be quite good for you.
Yes, there have been studies which show that one of the ways in which people can deal with pain is to
scream and shout when you're in labor. Yeah, and I think that that authenticity dimension, I think, genuinely does kind of connect people. I think the when we're using it in passion, to somebody else, then I think it can be very destructive because it's a weapon in a sort of status battle, I think. It's interesting that it's coming up again. I think we'll keep coming back to it. Sort of sensitivity to the status dimension of your engagement with other people, I think, is such an important part of building strong relationships with them. So I think that if you're using sort of bad language or swear words to play a status game about yourself, then I think that has a different kind of connecting quality. In making friends with the people that you're talking to. One thing which I was thinking of is that so many of the groups I'm working with are international groups. So many of our relationships are becoming more global, and in which all these nuances of the English language in the native English-speaking English-British community, slightly different. Have you ever come across that?
There was an example of this recently in the press. Did you hear about Macron talking about how he wanted to deal with people who wouldn't take the vaccine?
Oh, he wanted to piss them off.
Yes, okay, he wanted to émerder, which is an expression for which there isn't a perfectly accurate translation.
Ah, right, so I only heard the English translation version of this, not the French word.
Émerder is a French word which literally translated would mean to insert feces into. And clearly that's not its literal meaning any more than piss off is the literal meaning of that phrase. And so it was interesting that different newspapers translated this in different ways. Mm. Some softened it noticeably, and others gave a more robust rendition. And I think a lot of bilingual people would say, piss off is probably
the best mapping of it.
It's roughly where it sits. But of course, these things never map one-on-one. No. The French word, I don't know, I'll be... I don't know if swearing in French is allowed under these self-imposed rules. But anyway, the French word putain,
yes,
which we would politely translate as sex worker,
yeah,
is used very flexibly in spoken yes. French, much like we would use the F word.
Yeah.
And so a lot of times when you see sweary British phrases translated, the French word putain will appear multiple times, despite the fact that no equivalent English word has been used.
Mm. Yeah. I think, I mean, and there's Macron, of course, I suppose he's using that to position himself very specifically in a kind of culture war about vaccination. Yes. Is that what I recall?
Yeah. Yeah, man of the people. Yeah, sort exactly. Of yeah. Boris Johnson style.
Yeah. I remember Johnson's, an earlier prime minister once accidentally using, well, I suppose I should say the T word without properly understanding that actually it was crossing a line swear wise.
Or John Major saying on a hot mic,
oh, yes.
calling other about members the rest of his party bastards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
These things creep in. I think I'm struck that we are not the only people that speak English, and America has its own swearing lexicon. Speaking English language in a native way, Australia and New Zealand as well. But also there's this massive global population of people who are learning English as a second language, as a business language often. And so for those people, these questions are fraught with different levels of difficulty. But what I've often found is that they're actually keen to practice their swearing facility. I haven't had to radically change my strategy for those people, although I'm also very conscious that I'm tiptoeing around and need to explain myself a lot.
In one of Ben Elton's novels, there's a character who is very fluent in English, but always gets confused about where to put the swear words, which is very funny and allows Ben Elton lots of license and lots of humor and flexibility with where he chooses to put the swear words. I have, in fact, never encountered this in the wild.
No.
I think it's made up. And I think once you start to learn the rhythms of a foreign language, it starts to become obvious. There is a rule, which I'm now going to misremember, I fear, but it's about where you put the swear word if you're interrupting a word in order to insert it. You can't say unbelieve something bull.
Oh, yes, of course.
There's only one place you can put it.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah. You and I come from a place of working together as comics, okay? I remember the first summer we were doing a show together at the Edinburgh Festival. It was the first summer they did Big Brother on UK television. And, of course, every time somebody was evicted, Davina, I think it was that season, maybe it was the following year, she'd have to say, you're live on Channel 4, please do not swear. Yes. Because, of course, by that point, they kind of all of the were being watched censorship mechanisms had been dissolved inside the house. And in fact, during season one, they didn't really think anybody was watching them at all. But comics, maybe even particularly British comics, are people have an appetite everywhere to hear them be transgressive. And so relationships with rules and taboos are necessarily quite flexible and sophisticated for people in comedy.
But I think there's a trap there as well. I think it is very tempting to imagine that a funny story you tell about a garden hose will automatically become a funnier story if it's about an F-word garden hose. And so that can lead to people who just swear reflexively all of the time as soon as they're on stage. And I think, like anything else, you do it too much and it has a deadening effect. Mm. It loses its power with repetition. So I think, although I would defend my right to use swear words in any environment that I deem appropriate, personally, in order to preserve their power, in order to make sure they still do the thing I want them to do, I want to use them very sparingly.
Absolutely, really. Agreed. So we're really interested in kind of your perspective on this. So please get in touch with us if you could think of a particularly effective swearer who you know, particularly in maybe slightly more formal circumstances or work circumstances. And if you can think of examples of people who the pattern and the framework slightly contradicts what we've been saying, we're particularly interested in those examples. So do get in touch.
And if you'd like us to come and run a workshop for you, you can tell us whether you'd like this to be a PG workshop, a PG-13 workshop, or even an X-rated workshop. And we'll be happy to work within those constraints. But we do workshops all of the time, both in real life and on Zoom, on things like pitching for new business, giving presentations, building better relationships with clients, success in negotiations, and so on and so on.
I'm Alex McLaren. You can get in touch with us at the Spontaneity Shop. Just give us a call on 020-7788-4080 or email info@the-spontaneity-shop.com.
And I'm Tom Selinsky, and you can also get in touch with me on Twitter @TomSelinsky.
Thank you very much for listening, and goodbye.
You have been listening to You Can Talk to Anyone with Alex McLaren and Tom Selinsky. The producer for The Spontaneity Shop was Tom Selinsky. You Can Talk to Anyone is distributed exclusively by Acast.